Welcome back to the deep dive. You know how we do it. You bring the sources, we bring the actionable knowledge fast. And today, wow, we're hitting a big one. Maybe the most stress-inducing part of the whole economy for a lot of folks' housing. You asked us to look into a very specific piece of, well, future research. And that alone, that tells us a lot about the challenges you're likely facing. We're talking market volatility, right? And just this huge need for some kind of clarity, some signpost on the road ahead.
Precisely, yeah. Our focus today, it's all based on the title of a document you're interested in, U.S. Housing Market Trends and Forecast for 2025. Now, we don't actually have the report itself, just the title. But honestly, that title is like a blueprint. It tells us the kind of systematic knowledge you're trying to get your hands on. It's not just about what's happening now. It's about what experts think or hope might happen, you know, 18, maybe 24 months out. Just understanding the scope, the ambition of a document like that. That's a really crucial first step to navigating this market.
Okay, yeah, let's unpack that title then, because it is a very specific request, isn't it? Just the fact that you're looking for a 2025 forecast now. It kind of screams that the current situation feels, well, unsustainable. Like we're all just waiting for the chaos to finally hit some kind of end date.
I think that's fair. The current environment is pretty unsustainable, particularly if you're trying to plan, you know, major life stuff, buying a house, moving. And that word in the title, forecast, that's conceptually key. This isn't just meant to be a summary of what happened. It's supposed to be an economic projection, an attempt to chart a path through all this turbulence.
I appreciate that rigor. I do. But let's be real for a second. Forecasting the housing market right now, it feels like trying to navigate a ship in a hurricane. Is 2025 really a plausible pivot point? Or is it just kind of the earliest date we hope things might settle down?
That's a very fair challenge. 2025 isn't completely arbitrary, though. It's generally seen as maybe the earliest time frame where forecasters think the effects of current monetary policy you know, fighting inflation, where those effects will have fully cycled through the economy. If you look at the title again, trends and forecasts, the trends part tells us where the market is right now. Kind of stuck, right? Bogged down by high rates, low inventory. The forecast part tells us which station it's supposed to reach by 2025. Assuming, you know, the tracks don't get washed out completely, you really need both pieces.
Right. So any report that's actually credible, it has to rigorously connect that past behavior, the trends, to those future projections. And that connection, that naturally leads us to think about the key things, the essential pillars that any document aiming for 2025 stability absolutely must cover. Like if a report you find skips one of these, it's probably not worth your time.
Exactly. Pillar number one, the big one that dictates almost everything else in housing finance, the interest rate environment.
Okay. But it's not just saying, oh, the Fed will lower rates eventually. It needs a much deeper model than that, doesn't it? Because the real challenge isn't just the Fed's target rate itself, but how that actually filters down into, say, the 30-year fixed mortgage rate that people pay.
Precisely. Yeah. The report, it would need to model various scenarios for those long-term mortgage rates. And that means looking beyond just what the Federal Reserve does. You have to consider the global bond market, the risk premium on U.S. debt, and how much inflation people expect in the future. Because if people still expect high inflation, rates won't fall quickly. So a credible 2025 forecast has to try and identify a likely ceiling for where mortgage rates might settle. Because that number is probably the single biggest factor determining affordability for most buyers. Think about it. If the forecast says rates are going to stay above, let's say, 6.5% through 2025, well, that immediately limits who can even qualify for a loan. It keeps demand suppressed. But if they project rates dropping towards maybe 5%, that completely changes the picture. You'd expect a potential rush of demand, maybe even outpacing new construction. The forecast has to justify why it predicts a specific rate, using pretty complex global economic analysis, not just guesswork.
Okay, so predicting rates is like walking a tightrope. Got it. Let's move to the second pillar, which all this rate volatility has just made even more complicated. Supply and demand. We all know there's a structural shortage of housing in many places. But how does a 2025 report need to analyze this beyond just stating the obvious?
Right. This is where you have to look past the immediate crisis, the headlines, and examine the persistent underlying demand factors. Specifically, something called household formation.
Household formation.
Okay. Yeah, basically it's when new independent households get created. You know, younger generations finally moving out on their own, couples settling down, that sort of thing.
Ah, I see. That's a huge point. We're talking about that massive group of millennials and now Gen Z, too, who, for all sorts of economic reasons, maybe student debt, maybe the pandemic, have delayed starting their own household. So there's this huge pent-up demand just waiting.
Absolutely. Massive pent-up demand. So the forecast, it has to project the likely rate of household formation going into 2025.
Yeah.
If that rate picks up, maybe because the economy feels better or just demographics kicking in, that demand is going to soak up any new inventory really fast. Then, on the supply side of that equation, you've got two big parts. There's the physical cost of building stuff, lumber, concrete, you know.
Yeah.
And then there's all the bureaucratic friction, the regulatory hurdles.
Right. We hear a lot about lumber prices going up and down. But I suspect the real complexity, the sticky part, is in those soft costs that builders face.
You've hit it exactly. That's spot on. A good report needs to analyze way more than just lumber and steel prices. It has to dig into those soft costs. Things like permitting fees, zoning delays, finding skilled labor. These hidden costs can easily add like 20 or 30% to a project's total price tag. And they're incredibly resistant to changes in interest rates or Fed policy. So the forecast for 2025 has to make a call. Are local governments actually making it easier to build? Are they easing up on those constraints? Because if they're not, developers just won't build the kind of smaller entry-level homes we need most, almost regardless of what interest rates do. It won't pencil out.
Okay, so a 2025 forecast isn't just counting how many houses are available. It needs to look at how fast they can be built.
Right.
And crucially, where they're being built, and if builders can even afford to start projects that regular people can actually buy. We're looking for that key metric, right? The inventory absorption rate needed to get back to some kind of market balance.
That absorption rate, yes. That's the actionable knowledge you're ultimately searching for. And that leads us perfectly into the final, absolutely essential pillar, regional variation.
Yes. This might be the most dangerous trap for anyone relying on just a national average number, the U.S. housing market. It's kind of a myth, isn't it? It's really just hundreds of distinct local markets behaving differently.
It's totally misleading to talk about one market. A detailed 2025 forecast absolutely must break down the regional differences, particularly that ongoing split we see between, say, the high-growth Sunbelt areas and maybe the more established expensive coastal cities. For instance, the report needs to project migration patterns. Are people still moving heavily into places like Texas, Florida, the Carolinas?
Yeah.
If the forecast says yes, then those local markets are likely to stay super competitive. You'll probably see continued price pressure there through 2025, even if national rates ease up a bit.
Meanwhile, maybe somewhere in the Northeast or parts of the Midwest where populations aren't growing as fast or even shrinking, the market could look totally different. You might see houses sitting longer, maybe prices even softening, even if rates nationally are still relatively high. The forecast has to show that divergence.
And this is all tangled up with the future of remote work, isn't it? If companies keep pushing for, say, 3 or 4 days back in the office, doesn't that just put the pressure right back on housing within commuting distance of major job centers, kind of defeating the purpose of building further out?
It absolutely does, yeah. The 2025 forecast has to implicitly or even explicitly place a bet on the future of the traditional 5-day office commute. The authors, they have to make an assumption about where workers are going to physically be located. That whole shift in thinking from how far is the commute to maybe how close am I to a major airport fundamentally changes which regional housing markets are winners and which are losers. A really useful 2025 forecast will be granular enough to give you a sense of where your specific kind of job market, your area, might be heading. Okay, wow. This has been a really helpful synthesis. We've basically confirmed that this title, U.S. Housing Market Trends and Forecasts for 2025, it implies a need for a really detailed three-part analysis. You need the interest rate ceiling, you need that balance between household formation and construction constraints, especially soft costs, and you absolutely need that breakdown of regional differences driven by migration and remote work policies.
Exactly. We've hopefully armed you with the essential checklist now.
Yeah.
You know that any source you find, any report claiming to forecast 2025, needs to tackle all three of those areas robustly to even be considered credible. You're not just looking for a simple price prediction anymore. You're looking for the thinking behind the prediction, the modeling assumptions that lead to that number.
And that connects right back to your need for knowledge fast. We've defined the kind of structural integrity required for any decent forecast on this topic. So by understanding this complexity, the interplay of rates, building costs, where people are moving, you can filter out the weaker analyses much quicker. You can focus your time only on sources that really try to answer those three tough questions.
So to kind of synthesize our main conceptual takeaway, the search for stability by 2025, it really means finding a report that maps out the critical path back to some kind of equilibrium. And that path isn't just paved with cheaper interest rates. It's about hitting a structural inventory absorption rate. one that can balance that huge underlying demand from new households forming against the real-world friction of high construction and regulatory costs.
So what does all this mean for your next step? Well, we've confirmed the very specific, multi-layered kind of knowledge you need. It's this three-pillar forecast aiming for potential market stabilization around 2025. And you're now much better prepared to critically judge the sources you find next. Check them for clarity on rates, on supply dynamics, and on those regional shifts. And before we wrap up, I want to leave you with one final sort of provocative thought to chew on. Think beyond just the data points you'll find in these expert reports, the rates, the inventory numbers, all that. Ask yourself, what fundamental assumption are you already making? Maybe about the future of remote work for your job, or about your own career path staying stable. How might those personal assumptions already be shaping your own internal housing market forecast? You know, if your gut plan relies on staying put for 5 years, but maybe an expert report projects a significant downturn in your local industry, are you going to trust the external data or your own optimism? Really think about those internal expectations, because often they're driving your decisions much more powerfully than any external report ever will.